You're listening to Infrastructure Friday on WNHH LP 103.5 FM.
Good afternoon, New Haven. This is Giovanni Zinn and Doug Houselayton. Come back to you with a special Infrastructure Thursday on a Friday.
Indeed. Welcome, everyone, to the show today. I got to say, I'm inspired by that new intro music. I like that.
It's going to go great. Inspires us so much because this is an inspiring time. It's election season, as we all know. But more importantly for us, every year around this time, it's the tail end of construction season. So it is busy, busy, busy right now.
Right. It's a nice combination of trying to jam in everything that you need to get done while staring at the daily weather reports. you know, we like the phrase 40 degrees and rising is a nice, very key one in the construction world. And we like to see that when we're, doing paving and sidewalks. Sidewalks, you can sneak down a little bit under that. But paving, you really want those temperatures there. So we just finished a nice... speed hump program through a few of our neighborhoods, Newhallville being probably the first
largest
in the
set show.
We're trying to make sure that our streets reflect the neighborhoods that they're in. That's safe streets, slow streets, and streets that protect the lives of the people that live there and connect them to their neighbors.
So this Friday, we're flying a little blind with not much of an agenda between the two of us, but we're really hoping to have your questions about infrastructure and all things complete streets. And two of the things I wanted to talk about just to start with were, number one, the big storm over the weekend. I think we got to be a little topical talking about storms. And number two, more on the complete streets. We'll bring that up in a little bit. But so... You know, Gio, talk to me about what we experienced on Sunday night into Monday. And Monday was a vacation day for me, but wasn't very relaxing because I had no power Monday morning. Why did I wake up with no power?
So, what you saw there was a storm that rapidly dropped in atmospheric pressure. I think they call it a atmospheric bomb or something like that. I'm not...
Somebody fact-check us on that and tweet us at it.
Yep. Exactly. What happened was you had a wind-dominated event. We were worried about the rainfall quantities. We did get 2.6 inches of rain. Our most intense hour was actually only about a half inch of rain, and our most intense 15 minutes was about a quarter of an inch of rain. So that actually is a little... The short-term intensities were a little below what we saw actually only a few days earlier in the last big rain event. So we really didn't have too much of the high-intensity flash flooding kind of thing happening. You did see some localized flooding where catch basin tops got covered with leaves. Obviously, this time of year, you see a lot of that going on. And we do encourage everyone to help us out by cleaning off the tops of the catch basin in front of your house. And, but again, you saw a lot of trees going down, you saw power being, interrupted, and it was really a wind-driven event.
I was over, Monday, I was driving around a bit and got a call from a resident on Adeline Street. I don't know if you're familiar with that particular case on Sunday night, Monday, Big Elm needed trimming and didn't get trimmed. And because of the big storm Sunday night, came down crashing. And so this was a tree that's been identified since early in the spring. And Deputy Director Bill has been out there, Bill Crone, and we know that we had to trim it, but it was October 30th on the storm. So why is Adeline Street without power Monday morning when we knew the tree's got to get taken down? But it's October 30th. What was the holdup on the city side? That was a softball. That's a softball.
What's the holdup? It's a softball.
It's an elm tree.
Right. Elm trees, we can't trim, and I would defer to our parks department on the specifics, but because I believe of Dutch elm disease, elm trees have to be trimmed after they go dormant, which is generally speaking November 1st.
Yeah. So I wonder if that date moves now that climate is adjusting the weather pattern just a little bit, or just annual... change and variations in season. I wonder if November 1st is Has been looked at lately and for elms, and that's just a, you know.
Right, well, I mean, I think the elm trees obviously don't have a calendar, so yes. I mean, I think that's what one of the things that you see is all of the events that, you know, depend on the cold weather, you know, such as trimming elm trees, that season gets smaller and smaller. You know, here it's a little tiny footnote, you know, go further north, ice roads, for example, that it starts to become a real impact from climate change on the livelihood of people.
Yeah, I think folks on Adeline Street, they got back to power, I think, Tuesday morning, maybe Monday night. I was getting email updates from UI. But what was really fascinating was just, you know, we'd been out there. We identified the tree. We knew we were going to do it. It was on the fall trimming schedule post November 1. And then suddenly, October 30th, windstorm. I mean, that's just bad luck, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a nice string in the last 5 or 6 years of stuff right at the last couple days of October, you know?
we had snow a couple years back, right?
Yeah, that was 5 years ago. I was getting married 2 weeks afterwards. So, I think speaking of storms at the end of October, you know, we're coming up here. We just had the five-year anniversary of Superstorm Sandy. We had an event over at the reconstructed Brewery Square seawall where we had a lot of the state agency department heads come down and talk about, you know, the state's response to, you know, Irene and Sandy and what we've changed and what we have to continue to work on. So it was a very interesting event. You know, we got to see we used some of the disaster relief money to rebuild that seawall. We have other projects coming up out in Moore's Cove and a few other spots on resiliency.
How many seawalls do we have then?
Well, I mean, I think it's a very difficult question. Exactly what is a seawall? I mean, the city does own pretty large number of them. I think New Haven is interesting in that a lot of our coastline is public access, and a lot of the rest of it is industrial, and the residential portion of it is pretty small. I think we see that in Connecticut, trying to get access to the waterfront is often tough because it's very residential dominated. So because a lot of it is public, we're able to provide that access to people, and in turn, we own a lot of seawalls.
All right, I have a Facebook question from Aaron Good.
Oh, excellent. One of our favorite listeners, Aaron Good.
He said, how about some microgrids in New Haven like the one being developed in Bridgeport?
That's a great question. So, Gio, would you mind defining what a microgrid is?
Microgrid is a small, a set of businesses and other entities that have their own little island in the electrical grid. Where if all the power around them goes down, they have both the generation and distribution infrastructure to stay up.
Are you familiar with the Bridgeport project by chance?
I am a bit familiar. I'm not terribly familiar with the details of it. I mean, I think it's something that we've looked at repeatedly. I think there's some interesting legal questions on what you can and can't do with microgrids in terms of crossing the right-of-way. The franchise rights of the investor-owned utilities and things like that. And frankly, I need to probably educate myself a little more on it. New Haven has a couple of microgrids. Yale University has two power plants. Those are actually microgrids, not necessarily in
the macro microgrids.
Well, yes, I mean they're sizable, but that is exactly it. They can stay up while everything else around them goes down. And they're to a smaller extent, City Hall actually shares
a physical plant,
physical plant with the building next door. And, there's other examples of that. I think it's a fascinating concept. One of the things that we kind of have to look at is, what's the trade-off in terms of price? If you just use straight regular generation, an emergency generator,
right,
to power a microgrid, that has, some benefits, but you could also just get an emergency generator for each one of the facilities.
Well, and you'd be able to find out where to buy those emergency generators right here on Infrastructure Fridays on WNHH Radio, newhavenindependent.org, or live on Facebook.com.
And I have another Facebook question for you.
All right.
From Alex Dukalis, which doesn't seem to be listening to the show because he says, not sure exactly what you're discussing today. But okay. But what's the status of Edgewood bike lanes?
So I think this is also going around email chains right now. Status of Edgewood bike lane is we've begun construction on pavement rehabilitation and stabilization.
Right.
And for everyone who's not familiar.
Well, even before we go into the details, let us be unequivocal.
Yes.
Edgewood Avenue, downtown West, is being built.
Yes. Unequivocal. We'll be riding on it by this time next year. That's a long construction season. So Edgewood Avenue bike lane is a little over 2 mile protected two-way bike lane on the north side of Edgewood Avenue between Park Street and Forest Road. It's been with $1.2 million from a grant from the state of Connecticut, community connectivity dollars that is intended to be connecting and creating connecting gaps in our bike and pedestrian network. In addition to the Edgewood Avenue project, the Downtown West project, we've also been approved for two other projects through negotiations with Mayor Harp and Secretary Ben Barnes. Two more projects totaling roughly $2.5 million. One in the Worcester Square Mill River area, and one connecting effectively Union Station, West River, and the shoreline over at Morris Cove. So what has been really tremendous about the Edgewood Avenue project has been the feedback loop and the process with which we worked with our community as far as being the technical experts and working with our community experts. But as is being evidenced right now by a lot of folks, you know, I think we had, I personally had thought we'd be in the ground by now, but that was a little bit of my naivete, as it turns out.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the things that we have seen is a little bit of stealth construction, if you will, on it. We have repaved a section of Edgewood Avenue. The markings that have gone down are the permanent markings that
That's right.
Put down are actually the permanent markings for the road once it is, it's finally configured for the two-way cycle track. There's a temporary marking, which is just paint, which we'll be able to very easily remove.
Right.
So that was sort of the first thing that we had to do, is address some of the pavement condition concerns, and that has been addressed.
Really between Orchard and Sherman, or around the Orchard Street area, Orchard to Dwight, it was the other way, right?
I believe so, I'm not going
to... And it was really at Dwight and Edgewood where we were, to Giovanni's point, we were putting down temporary markings that also, some of which are very permanent, like the present lane divider, the lane skip line on that separates the two travel lanes, is actually the exterior divider for the future bike lane.
Correct. And again, not to dive too deep into the details, but hey, that's what we love to do here on
pretty sure all of our listeners are looking for the details.
Yes. We did the permanent markings are done in epoxy,
right?
And that's much more durable coating for traffic markings, and then the temporary lines are done in paint, which is easy to remove, and then we do the final epoxy once we stripe the bike lane.
So
I think one of the challenges on bike lanes is you really have to get all of the preparatory infrastructure in first, and then sort of in a quick blast put out the final markings, because you don't want to have a bike lane that sort of goes for a block and then dumps you back into an unsafe traffic condition. So I think there's a lot of this, again, preparatory work that we'll be doing.
And to remind everybody, it's 12 traffic signals are being renovated or rehabbed. And sometimes we're adding pedestrian countdown clocks and really enhancing the safety of the corridor for all users. I think the most safe, pedestrian countdown clocks are going to be really big. And speaking of pedestrians,
actually, even before you get to that, I think one of the fiscal realities of Downtown West is that the bulk of the investment actually has not a whole lot to do with bicycles, but rather is all of the pedestrian countdown clocks. It is the concrete under the ramps that we'll be improving. It is the paving. It is a lot of that other stuff that does work into the bike. The bike facility, which is the headliner, but it really, at the end of the day, the direct bike infrastructure is a small part of the budget.
Right, right. I think just a quick shout out as well to all of the three listeners on Facebook Live. I know there's a competing WNPR public radio over at the study at Yale right now. We have Colin McEnroe in town.
Oh, very nice.
Somebody's tweeting at me about that right now. But so back to the pedestrians and back to community connectivity. The city was recently in front of the administration, you and I specifically, yep. was recently in front of the Board of Alders committee reviewing a grant that the city applied for community connectivity. It was an August 1st submission. And can you talk to me a little bit about, what we submitted?
I can, indeed, I think.
Again, all of these are softballs. These are not trick questions. You know, it's
Well, hey, come on. But so what we identified was that the boulevard is a place that a lot of people use to get to work. They get to, we've got the adult education center over there. We've got commercial businesses. There's a lot going on there. And there's this nice stretch of the boulevard that doesn't have any pedestrian infrastructure on either side of the street. And in fact, you go in Google Street View or you drive by, you can see a very well-defined dirt path that has been trampled into the ground of where people would like to go on a sidewalk if there were one. So, it's a very straightforward application, straightforward design and construction too, which is something I look forward to. Putting in a sidewalk there, obeying in a sense the desire line that clearly pedestrians have through that area, and then we'll also do some improvements to a bus shelter.
That's right, and it's been a fun, this job is even more so from my life or my personal experiences. Having this job is really, whenever I walk around, I can no longer just walk around. I've got to look at the pavement conditions and I got to look at sidewalk conditions. And I've been spending a lot of time in West Rock lately, and there are some very notable and over at Sherman Parkway, mm-hmm. We've been cataloging very notable gaps in our sidewalk infrastructure. But then if you go out to, say, Quinnipiac Meadows or Q East and whatnot, on the other side of the river, we see a lot of neighborhoods without sidewalks. And I think it's imperative for a city, and I'm glad that it's a focus of ours, to bridge those gaps. And I'm really proud of the governor's office and DOT for creating this community connectivity program just for these types of gaps in infrastructure.
Right. And I do want to point out for the record, we are still waiting to hear whether that grant application will be funded.
Very good point. We have not won the grant. It is a competitive grant. In fact, they have to go to the bond commission and get their allocation done. So it's probably not going to be reviewed for months and months after, the state budget just kind of went through and whatnot.
Right. And again, it is very important. We do have 370 miles of sidewalk already existing, so we do a lot of work to keep up on those and to help our residents take care of their sidewalks. We really, I think there's two big gaps that, we've identified in commercial districts. One of them is the one we talked about in the boulevard, and then also the one over by exit 59 in the the West Hills area.
Right, right next to the West River.
Right, exactly. And, those are two big gaps that will be addressed. And so we're very much looking forward to that. One of the things is, look at the boulevard. We've had an unfortunate and truly sad number of fatalities there in the last, months and years. And, I think I can speak for Doug, whenever those sorts of things happen, they really do hit us. We do take them to heart. And it's something that kind of helps us double down and redouble our efforts to try to get to a New Haven that's safer for all users of the road.
And you're hearing about that New Haven right here on newhavenindependent.org or 103.5 FM WNHH Radio, the heart and soul of New Haven.
And the home of New Haven's infrastructure.
A little shout out to a high school buddy of mine, Andrew Keefe, who just joined us. If you got any questions, Andrew, let me know. But I wanted to switch a little bit, Giovanni, from community connectivity and microgrids to a big report that the department and sort of in collaboration released, the Move New Haven report, which obviously this is not your expertise. So
why don't you tell us about that?
So just remind everybody what Move New Haven is. It's $1 million study to look at transit mobility in New Haven, and it's coming up with a lot of recommendations. And some of those recommendations are infrastructure related, particularly in traffic signal infrastructure, as well as, say, built environment infrastructure. One of those things that's talked about a lot in the internet as far as my field, but not necessarily making the paper every day, is just the condition of where folks have to stand for the bus stop. You mentioned the bus stop at Route 1 and Route 10 with the plans to install additional infrastructure there. You know, we're trying to install a bus pad and a bus shelter on Route 80 at Quinnipiac Avenue. And something that the Move New Haven study talks about is new types of infrastructure and new things like transit-only lanes or bus bulbs and priority areas for pedestrians. And something that I'm really proud of your work and our work collaboratively, but your team, has really been designing for bus users on Howard Avenue. Do you want to talk a little bit about, I know we talked about it last time too, because Brian Tang asked about it, but.
Right. Yeah. No, we did talk about it last time. You know, I mean, we're proceeding on it. Again, we're looking for 2018 construction on it. You know, one of the things that's been really nice about the Howard Avenue project is that even though we've had a lot of sort of, it's a project that's been going on for years now and the planning, and we have finally the money for it. Is the how active the Hill South neighborhood has been and giving us feedback. And even though a couple of them may not believe it, we are actually really taking it to heart. And I think we're going to make a couple of changes to really reflect some of that feedback. But, you know, one of the challenges that we have as we're designing roads, you know, you don't want to have to design a road every 10 years. So trying to predict what the future holds can be very difficult. And certainly looking at, you know, Move New Haven has been critical in helping us understand that. And, you know, one of the things I think I've mentioned a couple other times is I'm fascinated recently about what driverless cars will mean to the infrastructure of the city and how we can start not quite thinking about that because we're still a ways away, but, you know, starting to make some plans long range that take that into account.
That's a great question. And hat tip, hello, Alder Adam Marchand, Ward 25. Thanks for listening. And we did just address a little bit of downtown West Edgewood Avenue regarding the pavement that we're replacing right now and construction in the spring. The driverless vehicle is really interesting because it will impact our lives, but it will play off of our infrastructure, and our infrastructure does have to be ready. There's a couple of ways that driverless vehicle can be done, which is V2V, vehicle-to-vehicle, V2I, vehicle-to-infrastructure. And so we're really focusing on the vehicle-to-infrastructure that really what is required is that backbone, that fiber backbone, the data backbone. Mm-hmm. Because of as we can take our traffic signals into the next generation of traffic signals, presently, all of the computations happen back at the headquarters and our servers. And what we'd like to see in the next generation of traffic signals is computation at the node. So trying to do calculations on Whaley Avenue, Whaley at Sherman, if you will. So Whaley at Sherman talks to Whaley at Boulevard, and the two of those traffic signals adjust in the field automatically without getting permission from us. Based on the performance at Sherman, it'll impact the performance at Boulevard. But for us in the Move New Haven study, again, our transit study, we're really looking at not necessarily automated vehicles, you know, driverless vehicles, but looking at how does transponders on your vehicle play off of our infrastructure. So one of the biggest things coming out of the Move New Haven report is a list of recommendations, one of which being better traffic signals, having transit signal prioritization. On my city vehicle, I do have a transponder that can turn the lights green for me. I don't use it very frequently because my staff knows when I do and they make fun of me. No, but also because it's not good to abuse our systems. But for our public safety vehicles, sorry, I just embarrassed Giovanni. But for our public safety vehicles, our fire trucks, our AMR, and our PD and fire, we actually have first response prioritization. And there's another level of prioritization we'd like to get to, which is a transit signal prioritization. But all of it requires upgrading our traffic signals to begin with, which we're starting
right,
to do.
Right, and I think this gets to the, if I can be a little philosophical, it gets to one of the biggest questions, which is, you know, in New Haven, we're 18 square miles. And we understand that all users of the road, people in cars, people on bikes, people in buses, everyone wants to get to where they're going as quickly and easily as possible. You've seen certainly suburbanization in the 50s and everything. You know, their answer to that was, well, let's make wider roads.
Right.
Right. And we not only do not have that as our mindset here, but we literally can't do that because we'd have to knock down buildings to do that. So, you know, really starting to look at these you know, the transponders and getting more information vehicle to infrastructure and stuff like that will really help us maximize the capacity of the roads that we do have and make it a much better experience.
That's right. You know. So I think our priority for is reallocation of right-of-way by mode shift. So on one hand, sometimes that means adding more sidewalk space, like our plans for Union Avenue with respect to a road diet on Union Ave in front of Union Station. So that's going from a four-lane road segment with two travel lanes to a three-lane, I'm sorry, two parking lanes to a three-lane road segment with two parking lanes and then 10 feet of extra curb for bike pet. Right. Sometimes the reallocation of public space is going to be a transit lane, transit-only vehicles, which is going to be new for Connecticut and new for New Haven. We have a red-painted bus stop right now. It's not a transit lane. It's actually just a red bus stop. But it's really helped, and from feedback from the drivers of our bus service, the feedback has been that it's very clear that there's not supposed to be a passenger vehicle there. There's less double parking. It's safer for that six-foot bike lane that's right next to it, and now people have kind of picked it up. The one thing that I'll say about fixing our bus service is going to be a lot of little things that's going to fix, quote-unquote, improve our bus service. It's not going to be one magic wand. There will be some magic involved with respect to different ways of looking at how travel flows with respect to contraflow lanes, transit-only lanes. That's kind of magic because we don't see it here.
Right.
But a lot of what we're talking about is transit signal priority, queue jumps, allowing the bus to go first, and things like bus bulbs, bringing people out to the from the curb to the bus rather than the bus to the curb. And once the, you know, the automated passenger counters and the ticket machines are improved. We're talking about faster onboarding and offboarding, alighting and boarding. And, you know, I think that's the way that we're going to improve our transportation network for our bus people. Like, the bus infrastructure is pretty minimal, unfortunately, in New Haven right now. There's a lot of buses, 129 buses and a lot of miles of bus routes. But, you know, what we've heard is that as a city, as a municipality, we're really excited to work with CT Transit and DOT to give them what they need to make their bus system work better. You know, I think.
Right. And I think that, you know, as we go out in the community, we talk to residents, you know, residents often ask us for better bus service, better access to buses. And there's also, on the other hand, a sense of frustration from some people who don't use the bus service about, you know, the quantity of time it takes for people to get on the bus and things like that. You know, one of the things growing up, my mother is from Italy, and she was an only child, so we'd have to go back there and take care of my grandparents. And, you know, I didn't have a car there, so we took the bus everywhere. And one of the things that really struck me when I later started taking the bus in the United States is that you literally have to pay as soon as you get on the bus in the U.S. Well, you know, over there, you'd have to, you'd go to a store, you'd buy a bunch of tickets, everyone gets on the bus, sits down, the bus starts moving, you go up to the little machine, you put your ticket in the machine, it punches it, and every once in a while, on a random spot, they'll pull the bus over and check everyone's ticket, and you get a massive fine if you don't have a punch ticket at the time. so I think there's other things like that, some operational improvements that I think you guys are looking at in Move New Haven that then open us up to a lot of other possibilities, design-wise, on how we manage buses on the street.
Right. And I think for us, you know, a bus is larger than a vehicle and takes up more space, but it also carries 40 times the number of passengers. And while we don't have an official policy, maybe I'm opening my mouth too soon, California recently went to instead of a vehicle miles traveled, they went to a passenger miles traveled, so that buses get 60 points versus a single occupant vehicle. And so just in order to count the number of vehicles that went through a piece of infrastructure, they switched the denominator, or the numerator, I guess, from being number of vehicles to number of passengers, which really does help. Because when we're thinking about it, we want to prioritize public transport, not prioritize private transport.
Well, even more than that, I think we want to prioritize getting people as efficiently from A to B. And there's no question that buses are a far more dense way of using the square footage of your road.
That's right.
And you know, that's the engineer in me talking, I'm sure. But at the end of the day, we'd much rather have our 18 square miles, you know, providing real estate that contributes to the tax base, that provides jobs and all that sort of stuff. So really, it's our job to find an infrastructure that's efficient and that enables all those things with the least footprint possible.
We've got another question from Aaron Good regarding downtown crossing, which we'll get to in just a second. Wanted to touch base a little bit on the infrastructure of bus stops again, which is part of the Move New Haven study that was presented on November the 1st. And if you scroll my Twitter, if you troll my Twitter page, you'll see a YouTube video, which I'll share on the Move New Haven page in a minute. And one of the things they talked about, and the New Haven Independent has covered, is bus stop spacing, and something we got a call about this morning from an alder regarding bus stop spacing. One of their constituents went to the presentation of the Move New Haven study, and folks were concerned that people were talking about removing buses. And what we're actually talking about is...
You mean removing bus stops?
Well, So there was a little bit of a translation loss with respect to what somebody heard in the field and what came back, but... you know, buses, at one point, my hunch is that the buses operated a little bit more, effectively and slowly over time, what you see is these little cricks in the route or, deviations from the norm on the main line, or addition of bus stops that have kind of impacted the effectiveness and efficiency of transit. And so the report, Move New Haven, is recommending that we look at the bus stop spacing in New Haven. We have about a little over 4,000 bus stops and a little over 130 bus shelters. So one of the challenges of having so many bus stops spaced about 0.1 miles apart is that every time the bus stops to pick up passengers, it's excellent. You know, that's the point. We got to have passengers to have a bus line. But every time they stop, they pull over. Then they got to merge back into traffic. There's a safety hazard there. There's also a timing hazard, letting passengers on and off, opening the door. You add up all of these seconds in the day, and suddenly they turn into minutes. They turn into being off schedule by 30 minutes, and then there's no hope for the bus to get back on schedule. So one thing we've been trying and piloting in the on a corridor. On State Street right now is the removal of some of the bus stops. And we're out there asking for folks' feedback right now. We've got signage up in our bus stops asking people to give us feedback on the changes that are coming. And what was great about the process was staff was wonderful. The community has been really helpful in making us aware of, you know, working together to try and figure out which bus stops are needing improvement. And through the process, we actually figured out a little bit embarrassing that we had never changed the Mechanic Street Triangle bus stop from 8 years ago when we shut it down for the State Street Bridge project. So the queue line used to run up State Street and go right past James and just keep going upstate. When the State Street Bridge project shut down the commuting under the State Street Bridge, it actually designated the queue route to go down east and then up Lombard and Humphrey and go right past the new DSS building.
Over right.
460, exactly. 470 James.
I think they actually, yeah, it's 470 James, but they have their own address. I think it's 50 Humphrey or something like that.
Yeah. So part of this process of trying to normalize our bus stops on State Street has really highlighted just gaps in our system that reminds us that we need to look at these things more. We need planners out there that are actually doing the work of going out and walking and a bike ped transit planner that would actually go and do the work to make sure that everything's working the way it should work, you know? So anyway, wanted to just to highlight that one part of our study. Take a look at Move
New Haven. I really appreciate that you brought up the State Street Bridge again, you know? And, you know, hey, this is where here on the home of New Haven's infrastructure, WNHH, 103.5 on your FM dial, on Facebook Live, and on newhavenindependent.org. You're reliving the State Street Bridge and how it's still chasing us to this day.
Nothing is sacred on this program. So
I do want to say hi to Lorenzo Zinn, who is apparently watching. So
Lorenzo Zinn?
A little hi to him.
hey, Zo. What's going on, Zo? And also, let's move on to our November the 16th public meeting. Maybe it's the 18th. I think it's November the 16th public meeting.
Someone check the flyer.
Checking the flyer right now. But we got a public meeting coming up on the downtown crossing. And the downtown crossing project is a transformation from the hill to the downtown with respect to the former Route 34 corridor. And the first major project of Downtown Crossing was reconnecting College Street and to create 100 College Street. So Downtown Crossing, the next phase is being presented to our community coming up. And one of the board members of the Downtown Worcester Square Community Management Team was wondering if we could get a little preview for phases 2 and 3 update.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly I think phase 2 is next. That's the reconnection of Orange Street across the 34 corridor there. I think this is one that I feel a lot more connected to. I wasn't really involved in phase 1. I don't think you were, either.
I turned George Street in my first few months.
Made George
Street two-way.
So we caught the real tail end of it. Phase 2 is an opportunity for us to take a lot of the lessons learned from phase 1 and integrate those and also put the latest and greatest thinking on how urban environments should work to bear there. So, a little bit on stormwater. We have a lot of green stormwater infrastructure, which we're very excited about going in phase 2, taking the first cut at stormwater through infiltration, through green stormwater techniques. And I think we're also very proud of the bike and pedestrian infrastructure in phase 2, which I think Doug looks eager to talk about.
You know I am. Phase 2 is reconnection of Orange Street. Phase 3 is the reconnection of Temple Street. And again, just a shout out to Zoe Zinn. He goes by Zoe, right?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
Lorenzo, Lolo, but
Lorello? He goes by Lorello?
Lolo.
Hey, Lolo. So Downtown Crossing phase 1 was the reconnection of College Street, making it from a bridge to a landmass. Phase 2 is the reconnection of Orange Street. Phase 3 is the reconnection of Temple Street. And, this is going to be, I'm very curious for feedback from the community on the Orange Street design, because we are very proud of our Orange Street design, but it's still a massive intersection, that someone has to cross. But
right,
the big reveal, and you're hearing it first on WNHH Radio, is that we have designed a protected intersection for bikes at the Orange and MLK and South Frontage Road.
Right, and I think also, a lot of pedestrian refuge islands. We have a raised crossing on the north side to really prevent people from zipping around the corner and up and really telling people as soon as they get to Orange Street going north, hey, yeah, you're in dense downtown here. So this is 25 miles an hour, on a good day. This is nice and slow here.
So that's our big challenge, which is coming off of a highway. It's still our challenge today with phase 1, but also it's going to be continuing our challenge with phases 2 and 3 as we roll back to Orange. It's going to be convincing a highway driver that they're entering a downtown and that something's new here. And so we adopted what Cambridge has really been leading the way on, at least in the Northeast, which is creating a raised table on the side street to allow for crossings to be a higher, safer crossing. And that's going to be on, would you call that the north side of the intersection? Orange?
Consider it the north side.
North side, across Orange, will be a raised table for bikes and peds. And then crossing, heading towards the train station, you'll be able to have nice refuge islands crossing this very expansive intersection. And again, for cyclists, you'll have a direct connection with protection, curb protection throughout the entire intersection. And that's going to be the first protected intersection we've ever designed. And hopefully we'll we beat it and build a protected intersection somewhere else, but I doubt it. So it probably will be the biggest.
Well, I think it's really one of the largest and one of the first, in this part of the country. And, as much as we talk about bike and peds and correctly, because they've been neglected for so long, we do also have to come up with a design that meets all of the needs for people in motor vehicles getting in and out. And that's a big challenge in of its own right. That's a place where you have many intersections near each other. You have to tie all of those together. They have to work as a system together. It's a lot of different competing factors. You know, you got a lot of people coming off the highway. They're, you know, you want to slow them down to create a safe urban condition. You also want to get them through the area quickly and efficiently, and you know, also tie in the fact that you have vulnerable users in large quantities coming across. So, you know, it's been a tough design challenge. You know, I do want to say that the designers, I think we beat them up pretty bad on some of this stuff. We kept telling them to come back and try harder. And it's been a lot of, you know, I think it's been really a great experience for us as a staff, building our own capacity as well, and being able to, you know, go back to the designers and say, hey, why don't you try this? We saw that. Try this. We think this will work. So, you know, I think, again, it's a very challenging, it's a very large intersection, but I think you'll see some of our stamp on it. And what we're trying to accomplish here in a New Haven that serves all of the users of the road.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, the vehicular users that are coming out of Air Raid's garage are all going to be brought to a stop at Orange Street, and that's going to be fascinating with no left turns onto Orange, which is going to be fascinating. You know, we're going to see some different things here, again, to try and make accommodations for all users. We hope it's going to be the preferred walking route to Union Station, because it'll go over to, or you know, to what is South Orange, and folks will be able to walk right there to Union Station.
Right, and interestingly, the Union Water State North Frontage intersection, which is the eastern boundary of Downtown Crossing Phase 2, is kind of becoming a nexus in our citywide bike network. And we've spent a lot of time making sure that all of those connections happen and happen in a high quality manner. You know, the last thing you want to do is have protected cycle track, 200 feet of Wild West, and then protected cycle track again. You know, getting that last little bit of link and connection in there can be very tough, especially in space constrained areas. And, you know, I mean, we're very jealous of out west where there's big, wide right-of-ways and, you know, space to do all these sorts of things. We go to conferences or whatever, or look online at news stories. We can't afford to go to conferences right now.
We miss you, NACTO.
Yes, we did. We just missed NACTO. You know, we look at it and we're looking at the designs and it's like, well, yeah, if I had another 20, 30 feet of right-of-way, great. You know, Portland does some great green stormwater infrastructure stuff where they have these sort of very ornate and beautiful stormwater swales down the side of the road. You know, they're 10, 12 feet wide. They got all these wonderful low maintenance plantings in them, and it's great. And it's like, you know, I can count probably on not even one hand how many places in New Haven we have the right-of-way for that. An old colonial city, a dense city, has its own challenges, and we can be, you know, nostalgic, or not nostalgic, but we can be wistful and thinking about what we would do if we had more space. But, you know, I think we've done a pretty decent job with the space we have.
So that's phase two. I got a comment from Bud Mensch we'll get to in a minute. Bud's been Facebook me about Maple and Winthrop. Sent me some pictures of a crash there over the weekend. We'll get to that in a second. So phase two is the Orange Street crossing. Phase three is Temple Street crossing. And, you know, what I think is fascinating about phase three is this opportunity for two-way streets. And we're really pushing as hard as we can with every project we can to put money together to turn our streets two-way. You see a simple traffic signal project upgrade program that is out to bid right now. It's called 92666, if anybody remembers that number. It's 8 traffic signals in the downtown. When those go into under construction, at the end of that project, we'll be ready for Church Street to be two-way from Grove to Chapel.
A quick fun fact, all state projects in New Haven have the prefix 92. We are municipality number 92.
92. You know, we're working hard in phase three as well to try and reconnect Temple, but also make Temple Street in a two-way manner. To do that, we have to do a number of other streets two-way as well. And so, you know, more on that as those projects develop and as our traffic signal projects develop moving forward. But
a couple comments on phase three. I mean, it's a fascinating project. You know, we're still very early in the design, and, you know, I think there's a lot of issues that we're still trying to chomp through. it is very interesting from an engineering perspective. And usually in roadway projects, we have a lot of horizontal limitations. What's really interesting about this is that it's extremely constrained horizontally, but it's also extremely constrained vertically. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of vertical challenges and constraints between utilities, the existing pedestrian bridge over Temple Street, grades, what is an acceptable grade, and it really ends up being an extremely complicated engineering problem that has been, keeping our skills sharp and making sure that, as we, look at designs and evaluate them and evaluate options and try to come up with, ways of taking care of the various design challenges, it keeps us on our toes and keeps us sharp.
Speaking of keeping us on our toes and sharp, Bud Mensch comments regarding speed humps on Maple and Winthrop. And I've gotten a lot of questions from a lot of people over how does someone get speed humps and what's the process to do X, Y, and Z. A couple of different avenues to get speed humps. While I love Bud, and I'm going to Bud, if you're listening, I'm going to work with you via Messenger to make sure that we get this in the queue and into the request queue. A couple of ways you can request speed humps: a letter from your alder, that always helps. That always does it. That'll start a project for us in studying. A complete streets application is another way to go about it, and that really is a way to build support through your neighborhood and through your neighbors. A petition through that from your a petition of your neighbors would always help. The more people that are on an application, the better. Your community management team or block watch could send an official letter on something like where they take a vote and sort of request this through the official channels. A number of ways where we can actually get traffic calming and complete streets requests.
And I think one of the important things to remember is that we really need a strong description of the problem. That's not necessarily are all problems solved by speed humps. So we appreciate and want to hear from the community what they think some of the solutions are, mm-hmm. but also a lot of information for problem definition. We do like to go out and see the roads. We can often see, in various neighborhoods, we see issues that, there are speed humps. Speed humps will take care of part of the issue, but there are other things as well that we can do to try to solve conditions, especially around sight lines or stop signs, pedestrian protection, things like that.
And Bud hit the nail on the head in the comment, which is check the police reports about the location for the last 5 years. We do a number of data inputs to test the validity or the need, if you will, with respect to traffic calming installations. One of those big data points is crash data. We have we're working with Sean Marr, with Alfredo Herrero, with Ray Willis, and trying to put together, and but Bruce Fisher in my office to take crash data to the next level. In reporting, and we think we might have found a good way with our new GIS analyst. With a big shout out to Alfredo, he's doing a great job, and really putting a lot of our systems into one big system. Crash data is not the only one. We also take traffic counts. A lot of people request four-way stop signs. There are national standards with which we can do things. One of those is on all-way stop or stop-controlled intersections. We have to follow protocols of national manuals to make sure that we're not putting the city at more liability. There's been so many requests for four-way stops. It's stop signs are going to be a safety project for me in 2018 for the department. We're going to try and standardize all of our stop signs in the city because we really are hearing our community is really nobody, I'll put it this way, nobody who's a community leader really cares whether or not an all-way stop is warranted. They want the stop sign because they want the stop. They want changes to their intersection. They want to make it safe, which is really, to Giovanni's point, the problem definition. If you can state the problem, we'll be able to bounce off when we get to the queue. we'll be able to help you with the technical side, but it's really a problem definition from the community that's really important.
So I think we only have a couple minutes left, so maybe some quick hit project updates, and then we'll get out the door here.
Ooh, project
so
updates.
A couple quick ones. I think the new firing range out at 200 Wintergreen, we got all the sheathing on the building. I think we're starting up on the roof, if we haven't already, very shortly. We're still tracking to around the end of the year, sometime around there, being able to start using it. Also, the Fort Hale Pier continues to be under construction. We've got a bunch of the pile caps on now, working out from the land onto the piles that are out there. We're doing some load testing on the piles that we've installed. Once we get those back and we're good to go on that, we'll be finishing up all the pile installation. We've had a little bit of run of bad weather here, with the big windstorm, for example. We had Terry Contracting pulled up the barge and got out of there. And also Clinton Avenue is going along very well.
That's a great one.
Seen a lot of new bump outs with green stormwater infrastructure. We'll be starting paving, I think, very shortly on all of the raised intersections and crosswalks. So it's coming together very nicely.
Clinton Avenue is really interesting. We think we talked about it a little bit last time.
I think we did, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to go into it more, but that plus Newhallville speed humps were really cases of our planning process working out for the betterment of infrastructure, I think. You know, if you had given me a paintbrush 2 years ago and told me what to do at Clinton Avenue or in Newhallville area for our traffic calming, you might have seen something a little bit different, but through our planning process, working with our community, the needs really spoke louder than, say, the technical side. And right. The big need for Clinton Avenue was pedestrian crossings, just getting people across the street safely. And so we pivoted from a bike first to a pedestrian first project, and it's really paid off, I think.
And one last project update, Farmington Canal Line. If you've been out on the Farmington Canal Line between Division and Ivy, you'll have seen that we've got it all staked out for lighting. We're doing raised crossings at most of the cross streets. And in part of the city's one dig policy, we're putting in two trunk lines for data fiber for the future, so that we'll be able to provide look for future uses for interesting data opportunities in Newhallville. Based on the fact that we've got this nice 2 4-inch conduits that will run up the entire length of the Farmington Canal when we're done.
And with that note, we'll invite Assistant Chief Kane to come and talk about blue phones and installation of what to do with these fiber conduits next time on Infrastructure Thursday, which will be first Thursday in December. First Thursday of every month, we're going to do an Infrastructure Thursday, even though it's a special Friday today. Going back to Thursdays.
Right. And again, thank you everyone for out there for listening. I'm sure we'll see you around out in the community soon. We'll hope to see you on the Downtown Crossing public meeting and a whole host of other things. And you're listening to Infrastructure Thursdays, Friday edition, on 103.5 FM at WNHH, online at newhavenindependent.org, Facebook Live, the radio home of New Haven's infrastructure. Have a good one.